I am.
Listen.
What?
I can hear the birds just about. But this time last year, do you remember in lockdown, the birds were so loud?
It was because they were the only thing saying anything. All the overflying aircraft had stopped. There was no traffic on the road, or next to no traffic on the road. Just the police coming around and staring at
them. Yeah, and telling you to get back inside your house.
Weird, wasn't it? Still weird, but it wasn't as weird as that.
But now there's loads more traffic on the roads.
There are quite a few things going on. I mean, it's been a build-up through the year, of course, but now it seems a bit of a holiday season is starting.
We have thousands and thousands of German tourists here.
And not everyone is welcoming them.
Really?
I say Mallorca and you say Majorca. I say
Majorca
and you say
Mallorca.
Mallorca, Majorca, Mallorca, Majorca. Let's call the whole thing off.
Now, welcome to the Majorca Mallorca podcast. I'm Oliver.
Hi, I'm Vicky.
And this is episode, we think it's 25, don't we?
It's 25.
Is it?
Yeah.
All right, episode 25, yeah.
Cheers.
It's quite a controversial subject, isn't it? The opening up of borders. We people are always talking about the Germans are coming, and some of our German friends are getting a bit defensive. Like, well, what's wrong with us? It's the fact that you're coming at all, rather than the fact that it's tourists from Germany. But basically, it's quite confusing, isn't it? The international travel rules, but around 40,000. Germans are expected to come here over the Easter holidays while travel still remains heavily restricted for almost everybody else.
But, I mean, here's the thing. How can you... how come people from another country can travel to Mallorca, for example, but people in Mallorca aren't allowed to go to Barcelona?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing that's driving people a bit crazy, is that inter-regional travel in Spain is basically barred, except for exceptional circumstances during Easter week. I think the governments reckon they made a bit of a mistake over Christmas, and that's resulting in cases going up everywhere. Actually, we've got the fourth spike coming
on
up
on its way
here, and in Germany, and in Britain, and all over the place. But
in Britain too?
Not as much, probably because of the wider vaccine rollout. But so the Spaniards are going, well, hang on a minute. So I can't fly from Valencia to Mallorca, but tourists can come from Germany or actually from a few other places.
We were talking to a friend of ours yesterday who wants to go back to the UK to visit her grandchild. And she has to do she's working out all the PCR tests and she was actually like, what, do you want to have a bet with me if I actually even get to get on the plane?
Yeah, I think that's the problem, isn't it, that lots of people don't know people know there are rules, but it's difficult really to find definitive cases. Obviously, you've got to match two sets of rules. Last week, for instance, Spain dropped its ban on travellers from the UK at the same time that Britain said you can't leave the UK.
Yeah.
So the week before that, you could leave Britain, but you couldn't arrive in Spain. And now this week, you can arrive in Spain, but you can't leave Britain. And I think German tourists have now got to quarantine when they go back to Germany. It's all confusing.
Meanwhile, the 31st of March is looming.
It is, isn't it?
That's a big day for a lot of people here.
What's going on 31st of March?
That's the 90-day window.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, this...
Brexit bites back.
This is going to create havoc, and it's got a few people panicking. I have to say, though, you probably mostly got yourself to blame if you let yourself into this situation. The deal is, as you probably all know, there's this thing called Brexit. If you're British, anyway, you'll certainly know about that. And you can't have free movement within the EU anymore, obviously. Unless you acquire residency in Spain, which most people who live here have. And there was a big rush to get all of this done before the end of the transition period. We're now in the post-Brexit world. And if you're traveling to the European Union on a British passport, you're allowed to stay for 90 days in any 180. And that 90 days, so if from the 1st of January, 90 days is the end of March. And unfortunately, a lot of people who live here permanently have not sorted themselves out with residency. So legally speaking, they should get on a plane and leave Spain for at least 3 months.
Wow.
Because they'll have effectively overstayed a visa, for which there is heavy fines and bans from the Schengen area.
You can be banned from entering Europe again.
Yeah, exactly.
At all.
Yeah, which is one thing if you're a tourist and you overstayed a visa, but actually people who've lived here for 20-odd years don't have a house somewhere else. And, you know, you've got yourself to blame, haven't got the right bit of paperwork sorted, may be in a situation where they might get themselves deported to a country that they haven't lived in for 20 years, have no house in, all the rest of it. So it's...
Do you think that might happen? Really, honestly?
I don't know. But that's what a few people are trying to work out. People who are, doing air quotes, asking for a friend.
Yeah, but actually, if you look at things like some of the bizarre deportation rulings that have happened in Britain over the years, especially around people who came over on the Windrush, for example, or being deported back to the Caribbean, even though they've lived there for, we've lived here for 40 years.
There's a crucial difference,
that kind of thing.
The Windrush people completely legitimately and legally arrived.
I know, but again, what I'm saying is that it was bizarre and unfair what was happening.
It was, yeah. Yeah, so we'll see what happens. I mean, I guess rules are there, aren't they? Rules are rules. But that you're going to have to deal with the practical situation of a bunch of people who, despite being told for
several years,
4 years, 2016, the referendum, wasn't it, that they might need to get some paperwork, so we haven't. There may be some concessions or some grace period or something, but if you're in that situation, you need to start really thinking about what you're going to do.
In the meantime,
same with driving licenses, actually, we should say. You've missed your boat there, because if you could have a UK license in Spain, and actually didn't technically need to change it, even though lots of people thought you did. But now you have to get a Spanish license.
You're wrong, because you did technically have to change it if you didn't want to have to go and resit your driving license before the end of last year.
So that's what I'm saying. Before Brexit, you could have a UK license here, no problem, as long as you like. You didn't have to sort it for a Spanish license. Because of Brexit and because EU licenses aren't recognised in the European Union, you had to change. You could sit a medical, and
which was easy. The bit with the I remember we both did it, and I think I was like, I'm not certain I passed that or not. It was like playing Space Invaders.
It was like a sight test and a hearing test and a kind of like coordination test,
which I don't think I did all that well
given,
on.
Given the standard of driving, there must be a fairly low bar. So you could do that, pay a bit of money, have a medical, swap your license for a British license for a Spanish one. Can't do that anymore, I'm afraid. If you didn't do that, you now have to sit a driving test in Spanish. You have to retest
that
in
would,
Spain.
That would be quite nerve-wracking.
Apparently it's really difficult.
Could you pass your driving license again now if you had to sit it in any language?
Yeah.
Do you reckon?
I reckon.
Do you know what all the road signs mean then?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Fairly self-explanatory.
Hey, in Palma, they were going to change all the road signs, weren't they?
Street names, yes.
Because of Franco. But now they were going to rename loads of road signs. And I think it was this week they were going to do it. And then everyone went, don't you think you've got something more useful to be doing with that money?
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't awfully expensive, but they...
what are you doing, you idiot?
Spain kind of cleansing itself of its... the Franco era, its fascist past. Franco quite liked, like most dictators, they liked statues, and
he liked a photo of himself, didn't he, Franco?
He did, and he quite liked naming streets after his cronies, which is what he did. So there's quite a few in Palma named after various generals, and the somewhat controversial Joan Marc, who was actually probably one of the most famous Mallorcans.
Yeah,
he was. He was a bit of an iffy character at best. He was known as by even his friends as the last pirate of the Mediterranean.
Well, he banked with them, Ollie, so just be careful.
I know. He was one of the richest...
My overdraft to be maintained.
In the 20s, he was one of the richest men in the world.
Really?
Mostly by running contraband trucks and guns and stuff, apparently.
Yes, someone told you.
Someone told me. And he also was somewhat instrumental in trying to keeping Spain out of the Second World War.
Mm.
It's a good long story, but basically he was given money by the British government to bribe Spanish generals to keep them out of siding with Hitler and Mussolini.
Okay.
And a fair bit of it, I think, found its way into his back pocket.
Let's do a podcast about that.
Yeah.
But today's podcast, the main interview is with Chris and Kat from Flory the Lorry.
Yeah, these are great people, actually. Hmm.
Flory the Lorry have actually now returned to Menorca because we did this interview a couple of weeks ago. But they came over. They are living in a 7.5-ton ex-delivery truck.
It's not a camper van. It is a lorry.
Yeah, they've converted it into a home on wheels, and we were very privileged and delighted to be invited
and
on board.
Slightly jealous.
Very jealous.
Let's have a listen.
Yeah, enjoy. We are in Flory the Lorry, which I'm delighted to say that we've been invited aboard for this podcast interview. Thank you very much, Chris and Kat,
for allowing
us into your house wheels.
It's great, isn't it? We already want one.
I wanted one before I got here.
That's why we're here.
This truly is your home, isn't it? This is where you live.
Yeah.
Is this where you live all the time?
Yeah, full time.
Wow.
How have you been living in Flory?
It was 2 years last week.
Yes, 2 years and a week or so.
That was our anniversary 2 years ago, living in it, yeah.
And before that, you were living in a house like a
Edwardian house in London.
Yeah.
Normal people. And downsized everything from the house to fit in here. Basically got some paperwork in my mum's house.
And that was the dog.
Oliver, could I ask you to move your stuff? Because Rollo wants to get down off the bed suddenly.
This is the podcast. Yeah. Every podcast we have features the dog.
And every time we do anything, he then decides to make a noise or wants to...
Unfortunately, this is the place... You can't see where I'm standing, but where I'm standing is where I usually give Rollo a treat. So he's just spotted me and gone, I get
maybe
food.
That's what it is, yeah.
Rollo is a chocolate lab.
Yeah.
And is he called Rollo because he's chocolate?
Because he was the last chocolate lab, and I don't know if you remember the last Rollo.
He's lovely.
Right.
A lovely boy.
The obvious question is, why did you move out of your house and live in the
Well, my girls are 24 and 27. They've been to university, done my bit. Chris's kids they're younger, they're 17 and 19 now. They started only wanting to come holidays to see us, and we used to have them every other weekend, and we were maintaining a four-bedroom house in London. He was commuting to work, working all hours, I was working all hours, and it was like, we're alone in this house, there's no point anymore. And we've always travelled, we had motels before, and we thought, that's fine, we can have the kids in the holidays, because they can come to wherever we are, forgetting that. Obviously, COVID wasn't an issue at the time when we thought that. We saw them all in August, was the last time we were able to see all the kids. And then my mum, his parents, my dad, they're all okay. So it's a period of our life where we haven't got our kids anymore.
I was holding my breath then for the bad news.
No, they're all healthy. This is the time to
period
go.
Of going, because eventually, at some point, I might need to look after my... I'm the only daughter in England.
Yeah.
Because my brother's in Australia, so I might need to help with the parents or whatever. There might be grandkids. We're free at the moment.
Mm-hmm. So it's time for an adventure.
It was time for us to do it,
I think if grandchildren turned up, Catherine would be saying, drive that lorry back to England right now.
I think we'd still go.
Stay away, wouldn't it, really, if that happened?
But people say, how long are you going to be in here? And things like that. And there is no... Well, we're fit and healthy. Well, we can be living there. I don't see what the difference is to a house.
What gave you the idea to live in a van?
So, as Catherine said, Catherine's talked for a long time about doing travelling in a camper van for a period of time, sort of take a year off or as a sabbatical or something like that. Actually, when she was much younger, she went for a year in a camper van in New Zealand with her.
I lived with my 4-month-old and 3-year-old daughter in a motorhome traveling around New Zealand.
You've got previous then.
So I've done it before.
So Catherine's got previous on this, and she said we could travel in a motorhome. And me being me went, oh, they're a bit flimsy. The problem is that, they call them a motorhome. They're not really a home. They're something for a 2-week holiday, Easter away, maybe the odd weekend, and then it's all winterize the thing and put it away until the next time you're going to use it in the spring. And We've had one, obviously, for a number of years. We've had various different camper vans, and things do fall apart on them quite easily. And then you've got to go to a motorhome place. And I think motorhoming and yachting, if you have to go to either of those shops, if you want to buy a plate, it's like £1 from IKEA. If you want to buy a motorhome plate, it's £5. And if you want to buy a yacht plate, well, that's going to cost you, yes, sir.
But also, yeah, there's
the expense of getting repairs and stuff like that and things like this. So we spent a lot of time talking about it and me going, motorhomes fall apart. And then we were actually in Menorca on holiday. We were doing a diving holiday. We were staying in a place called Playa de Fanels. And one of the dive instructors said, come for a beer this evening. I'm parked just up the road. And we're like, oh, you live in a vehicle? And she's like, yeah, I've got a lorry. And we're just like, she's bonkers. I mean, she is a bit bonkers. But, you know, we go up there with a few cans of beer and there's a bloody great Mercedes up there.
Whoa.
And suddenly you're like, oh, my God, I could make one of these. Chris, you're drunk. No. I mean, yes, but no.
That's what we were just thinking. That was the start of it. Amazing. He was the one who...
Does she know that she...
Yes.
Yeah, she's still in Menorca now. She's stuck in Menorca because she didn't want to go back to mainland. We see her, we saw her last year.
So she's met Flory.
Yeah, yeah. And we've had photos, but she doesn't like to be on social media or anything. So we always sort of like that. Yeah.
Oh, that's great that she inspired you.
So, yeah, we got back from that holiday and it took from, I can't remember when the holiday was, September?
We bought the lorry in November.
We bought the lorry in November. So it took me 2 months to talk Catherine into I can build my own motorhome.
Yes.
And the argument of you're an IT guy sits at a desk all day. I could put a shelf up. It can't be really hard. It is quite hard, if I'm honest.
So all of the interior that we are sitting in has been built by your own hand.
You described a bit. It's a little bit like being in a sauna.
It's a lot of tongue and groove.
You can see it online. You can see previous posts. You can see on floridalorry.com, you can actually see photos of it empty as a removal van and how it progressed. So underneath all the wood that you see, there's a structure of wood as well.
Right.
And actually, at the time, when we first started that, the wooden beams of the structure, we had no tools even. So we were actually
cutting, sawing by hand.
We bought a load of wood and a saw and went, let's get started then.
Well, I guess if you built it yourself, also, we talk about fixing it. If something goes wrong, you know exactly how it was made.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, this shelf is about an hour old because we needed a shelf in there. It wasn't working properly. Yeah. And, you know, if we want to change anything, I do have a whole new electrical system for the mains electric when we shore power, when you hook up, what have you. And I do have all the plugs and everything else I bought all the way from England. Mm-hmm. And they're still in the box and haven't quite got around to putting it all together. So, you know, you do change it if you want to.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is a podcast, so I can't say over here, as you can see. But the kitchen is at the front end of the vehicle. And originally, this was going to be a galley kitchen with a bathroom on one side. Hence, there's a weird skylight, not in the middle. And it's dark this end because the solar panels are here, because we were going to have a shower. You don't really need things for that. So we changed our minds. We are in a field with geese, chickens.
Rolo likes enough, likes to bark.
Horses, yeah. Thank you, Rolo.
Yeah, Rolo.
What can you see, buddy? That's... Children will not play with you if you bark.
It's that big mastiff.
Oh, is it?
He's very friendly.
Oh, he's so friendly. And Rolo gets scared then.
Rolo barks to be friendly, and it's just, it doesn't work for him. The bathroom we do have is sort of in the back third. And that was our fourth attempt at a bathroom. So we decided to have one at the front initially, and then we were going to have the bed. So our heads were sort of towards the back of the lorry and our feet towards the front, and the bathroom on the side. And then we changed our minds again and we made it thinner, and then we were going to move it forwards. And actually, when we moved in, we didn't have a bathroom at all because we still hadn't decided. And we finished the build on Catherine's dad's driveway in Suffolk. And yeah, that's the bathroom we got because that was the only place left for it by then.
So you kept changing your minds. Yes. You didn't
We had a plan. We used SketchUp. And then once we had designed it on SketchUp, we got Oh, then we made models.
No, we started with graph paper, going, it's 6.1 metres long, so we'll do 61 little squares this way. Mm-hmm. And it's 2 metres 39 this way, so 24 squares this way. And then draw where you want the toilet and draw where you want the kitchen. So we did that. Catherine can't picture that, so she's like, I don't understand how that works. So then I printed out little boxes you could make. You can get them online and you can specify the sizes. So I literally made the fridge at about the size, half the size of your hand, and then glued that into place on top of everything. And then we
all
pictured it.
Yeah.
And this was every single night for weeks.
And then when we bought the lorry, it was empty, and we saved up cardboard boxes. So we then made it to size.
And made it out of cardboard to decide.
To walk in it and see.
So everything and that we're looking at in the cupboards and the beds, we made the cardboard and put it inside the
original sketchup.
Yes.
Look like this.
Yeah, so we got the cardboard and rolls of duct tape and literally taped all the cardboard together to make all this stuff. I mean, you couldn't sit on the sofa, that would have gone very wrong. But, you know, it was all in place, and this is where the door would be. The door, obviously, is in, it's about central on one side of the lorry, but it was meant to be actually further forward. So I don't think anything is in the place where we originally envisioned.
No, not from the sketch.
I like the way that you've got the bed at the back so you can, like, you could sleep under the stars almost, couldn't you, in the summertime?
With those open, yeah. With the doors open, wide open.
Do you
do
that? Is it nice to sleep like that?
Last year when we were in Menorca, we did quite often because it was so hot. And I don't know, we had the heat wave, didn't we?
Yeah.
It was a heat wave in Menorca and Mallorca. Everywhere it was a heat wave.
It's hot every summer.
No, but this was
45, I think it was.
Yeah, it was bad.
Yeah,
it was brutal for a couple of weeks.
But we sleep with that. But we actually were supposed to have it done in January, but we're here. But we're having the back doors, and what, two big back doors that we're having them cut. So that we'll be able to open
like
from
door.
The bed. Yeah, we'll be able to, like the barn, like this one's a barn door. The front door's a barn door, but we can open from the back from inside.
How fab.
And yeah, so that'll be good.
So how long did it take from going, we're going to live in a lorry, to actually the maiden voyage?
So I would say we bought the lorry in November 17.
We left
the Christmas was coming, so we put it off. We measured it and got all excited. Yeah. And then realised this is a massive lorry. kind of got scared, had Christmas, had New Year, thought we'd go on holiday to avoid it all. Went off to Egypt diving, came back, and then thought we really need to make a start if we've bought that truck, because now it's been 3 months and we haven't done
now
a thing.
Now we have a truck. Right.
So obviously, England is the coldest month in February, so that's the time to start. So yeah. Catherine, the poor thing, and Rollo, who was only a puppy at that point, were basically sitting in a chair in sub-zero temperatures while I sawed wood because...
You were keeping warm then.
Well, I was having my kids every other weekend, so it was only every... I had 26 weekends...
I was helping cut the wood.
...to make it. You were helping cut
you
the wood.
You were sitting in a chair.
Catherine would give up somewhere around Sunday lunchtime.
Yeah.
And I'd carry on working till like 7 o'clock and say, look, come on, if we keep going, you know, we'll have a take when we get home, okay? You know? But yeah, it was very cold and very unpleasant to start with.
But we went from, so we got the van in 2017 and we went May 2019 was when we actually left the UK.
Okay. Right.
We moved in February,
months.
But we left the May 2019.
Where did you go first in your maiden voyage?
Our very first voyage, as you say, we did a shakedown.
We were left living in it or...
No, not,
that's
the,
not,
the first
not when we're living in it.
The first time
first
we went
time
abroad was
yeah.
Embry. There's a place about 50 miles south of Calais called Embry. And we
that
hadn't quite finished. And it was, we've built all this but never moved it anywhere.
Oh,
shall we
goodness.
Actually drive
tested
around?
It, yeah.
And honestly, if you tumbled it down a hill, there would have been less mess in it. All the shells, the walls, you know, you can't leave things. You'll find that we do have a number of rubber mats, which are actually very good for holding, say, fruit bowls or things.
Yeah.
But to give you an example, we're still not used to this. When we pulled up here on Thursday evening, I think it was, these two cupboards had popped open and Cocoa Pops had fallen all over the floor. Literally, it's covered in chocolate.
That's what happened to
Olga. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's
obviously, Catherine has to stand outside with the dog while I frantically sweep because chocolate's poisonous to dogs. So, to try and catch every little bit of it.
But that journey was a tester. And then when we got back to the UK, we broke down. And we ended up realising we learned a lot from that. From one, from the moving the vehicle, what we need to do, you know, like put things
nailed down
right. and things. And two, that actually you're going to end up with no home. If your vehicle breaks down and they take it or tow it away, it has to be towed. You're homeless. Right? So
true,
we ended up going back to my dad's and staying at dad's, which is lucky because we have got family. You know, so you can stay.
No,
with.
We stayed. We were going to rent your house out, but it hadn't been rented yet.
Right, yes.
So we managed to get back to our house. But I mean, Catherine did a fantastic job because it was like 7 o'clock at night. It was dark. It was cold. We were standing in a Tesco car park while they lifted the back of the lorry up onto one of those big trucks that actually tows on the lorries and drove it away to Hamel Hampstead to be fixed.
Were you in pieces? I would have been really a mess.
Well, you suddenly realise you have no plan for what happens.
No,
so we have a hold all and we're supposed to be writing a list. We haven't quite got round to that.
No, but
inside it is a list. Grab this, because at the point where your home has been
taken
damaged and it's going to be taken away, you're not going
to
be thinking straight.
That's what I've got now. Yeah, I have got, because that made me realise. And we did manage. I managed.
I would have forgotten toothbrushes. I would have forgotten
the dog food.
You know,
the basic.
The dog.
You know. But anyway, that sorted a lot out, didn't it? And then
it's quite scary actually, because your home does get towed away if it breaks down. You know.
Yeah.
And you can't sort of live in the garage while.
We've had two breakdowns since on our tours, and we have ended up just saying to the breakdown. They say, oh, you can take it to Gareth to look at it tomorrow. I said, okay, because it was still moving.
Yeah.
We said, we'd rather just stay in it, because they'll put you up in a hotel while breakdown. I said, I don't want to stay in a hotel.
No.
I'd rather stay in this.
Mm.
And we've been all right. So we can, and we have stayed in garage forecourt in Spain's Pyrenees, is it?
We stayed in the Pyrenees in the forecourt because there's the vehicle has a great light, which can mean anything from the indicator's broken to your exhaust has fallen off.
My car's got the same thing.
Yes. Yeah, what a useful light. Something is wrong.
I'm upset about something.
Yes.
Yeah.
That car said something mean to me.
But this one, I think it was the same thing we had in France recently, and it's the turbo stops working. And we've had Flory weighed, 7 tons, so we're under the weight limit.
Really?
But if you have a 4.5 litre engine trying to pull 7 tons without a turbo, you really know why people have turbos on vehicles.
Mm.
This thing will do maybe 45 miles an hour after 15 minutes. So I had quite a queue behind me trying to get to the garage, and obviously trying to travel any distance would be almost impossible.
Yeah.
So we ended up,
it cleared itself that
it
time.
Did.
And then it went wrong in France this year, and they replaced a sensor, which apparently was detecting the pressure difference between the turbo and the atmosphere or something. You really know when the turbo doesn't work on your vehicle. Why you have to have a sensor to tell you and turn your turbo off? Because the only thing broken now was the sensor.
Yeah.
It's like if you could just join those wires together, take the sensor
out. Answer their question. We parked on a forecourt.
We've parked in, you had a flat tyre, so we had to park in a
supermarket
car park. So yeah, and we were in Decathlon at lunchtime a few days ago because I was working and had a meeting, and I thought I could make it here in an hour, and I didn't make it. So we literally sort of pull over. Sorry, this is where we're staying
because
while I work.
You're working online.
Yeah, I work online full time, so sort of 10 till 6.
For a UK company?
For a UK company, yes.
Right.
But I guess in the last year,
IT, isn't it?
Yes, I'm a DevOps engineer for a company called Go Install, who do video calls for people. So one of our biggest customers is Currys, for example.
Video calls has been a growth industry over the last year.
Yeah, I mean, lockdown's proven fantastic for that kind of thing.
because I was going to say that working online for the vast majority of people before this time last year wasn't something that most of us did. So
no, I think there's
a lot of people have had to take on the same lifestyle that you have, as in working online, and you can do it remotely, you can do it wherever you are.
But it's called digital nomads, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think this is an absolute growth area, because one of the things that stops a lot of people from living in a lorry and driving it out is having to go to work.
I
think there's been a very big, certainly in the UK and even more so in the States and things like that, it's a bums on seats mentality. If you're not there, sat at your desk at 9 o'clock, you're not working.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've been working for a number of companies over the years, and they'd be saying things, I'd say, can I work from home on Fridays and stuff like that, because I had to pick my children up and things like this. And they'd be like, oh, well, we're not really sure about that. It's like, do you just think I'm going to sit there watching Netflix? I mean, come on, I'm going to do my job. In fact, I feel when you are allowed to work from home, you actually work harder to prove you can do it because you want to keep doing it.
I agree.
I think that's that is going to be the big change from COVID.
Well, they've now had no choice.
I think that might be one of the positive changes is making people's life more...
In our little village, we've got a one of our friends has just moved from the UK, and he's often you see him sitting outside the pub when the pubs are open, drinking coffee, and saying, "I'm on call." He's an IT help desk guy, I think, or something like that.
Well, that's the thing. If you don't really need to be in the office, why do they make you go in the office? Yeah. Our company now is, I think, 47 people. Pre-lockdown, or just as lockdown came, it was 13. So they have an office in central London for 13 people, and we're now 47. Yeah, so there is no way we're going back to that office. And they've accepted that. They think, you know, because we are working in a growth industry during COVID, but it'll continue to grow. They've decided, you know, it actually works. And I think a lot of companies have suddenly gone, we're paying a fortune for an office, when they can just work from home.
I completely agree. I think the digital nomads, which are a relatively new thing, I think by the time everybody goes back to work, the point is that everyone's not going to go back to work. People are going to be realising very quickly they can live wherever they like and still do their job. And I'm sure that's a lot of people are going to be moving to places like Mallorca.
Yeah.
Because they don't need to do it.
It'd be interesting to see what will happen, especially in the UK and London and all the central hubs. Mm. Things are going to change. Because if people are able to do that, things will change on property markets, on everything.
I think
a lot of people are appreciating the concept of freedom and nature a lot more as well. And needing to be outside and appreciating being in touch with green things.
Yeah, and I think what I found interesting in the first lockdown, because we went away, as we said, and we did 8 months away, came back to the UK and ended up in lockdown. And I know a lot of people found it really difficult and the whole thing of lockdown, but we'd already almost like you couldn't get this because this shop was open. We'd already minimalised our life.
Yes.
We'd already just gone for a walk in nature or that's all. We'd already done that. So it was almost like it didn't feel so terrible for us.
There is a penchant for people to fill the space they have. One of the things I read about when you're building a vehicle, be careful of how much storage you put in because you can use it all. And you'll fill it up very much like a house. If you have a 2-bedroom house, you'll fill it with 2-bedroom house kind of stuff. If you have a 10-bedroom house, you'll buy even more stuff. Stuff actually accumulates as well, though. And obviously, we have a weight limit, so we can't let stuff accumulate. So we kind of have a rule about if it hasn't been used, if it's not essential, like, you know, breakdown tools or stuff like that. If it hasn't been used in a year, it's going. And if you buy clothes, you must throw some old clothes away because we can't make more storage for clothes or keep going. We flagrantly disregarded those rules completely. I've still got my fishing rods I haven't used for over a year. And Catherine just keeps buying clothes.
That's not true. And I give away. I stick by the rule. You're the one who's not with fishing.
Then why did I lower that shelf so you could get more drawers?
This is
a good example of something I wanted to ask. Actually, how do you get on as a couple in a small space? Because even if you get on super well and you love each other to pieces, well, I know we've as got an individual that you also
need. You need your space.
Your private time.
And it was difficult at the start. If we have an argument or something, I tend to go up on the bed and I'm looking up at the bed towards the back of the vehicle because it has almost become a separate place, even though to you it probably just like, well, you're still there. It feels psychologically it's a separate space for me. But also we travel with a car. And that, you know, when you arrived, you asked us about the car. One of the main reasons for me having the car...
Air conditioning.
It's independence.
Yeah.
Okay. It's independence. I can get away. When we are actually going any distance travelling, which has been 6 months because of lockdown and things, but really going, I get catch-up time for myself. Without just exploring places and whatever. It is just catch-up time because I'm just following a lorry.
And I suppose you have an advantage over a boat in that you can go for a walk.
If you're on a boat, you can't get...
I think it's something you also learn as well that... Yeah, for example, we had an argument early on about, I can't even remember, a couple of years ago, about something, and I'm like, right, storm out, and now I'm standing in the rain. What am I going to do now then?
Yeah.
So after about 10 minutes, you know, usually I can do a whole afternoon of grumping if I want to. Mm-hmm. But after about 10 minutes, you're like, right, let's go and sort this out because it's just not going to, this isn't going to work.
Yeah. I think it makes you work harder at your relationship because you can't, like you said, if you live in, when I was at home, if we had an argument, quite often I would run away to a friend and go, and actually I'm not sorting it out with Chris.
Yeah.
And sometimes you might forget what the argument's about and you carry on, but actually there's underlying things that need to be sorted out. Mm. You can't do that in a small space. You are with that person. You can't run away for too long. You have to come back, and there's no one else necessarily for us when we're, you know, travelling. And we have to work a lot harder at thinking about, actually, I need to sort this out. Actually, I was wrong. Or
more mindfully, not necessarily harder. You need to kind of...
A lot more mindful, you know, about
just be more careful with how you approach things so that both people's opinions are getting aired.
Yeah,
I think there's also we have learned in a way to be together but separate. So Catherine spends a lot of time answering people on Facebook and Instagram and stuff like that. The amount of effort she puts in is huge. I'll sit here and read a book.
Yeah,
I don't do that. So Catherine does all the social media. So I'm getting to relax to read my book.
You do the shelves.
And I'll put the shelves. It's my weekend work. I'll put the shelves up and things like that. But you're kind of, you're both here, but you're doing not, your own thing.
Yeah.
You're not both standing around going, what should we do now? What
so you're being creative or you're being independently doing things.
Yeah.
I mean, in a similar vein, there's if you decide that you want to try and, you know, live in a lorry or a van or anything else full time, just be prepared for no secrets.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, people at work have said to me, they know I live full time in a vehicle, and they've said, you know, I'm so jealous of your lifestyle, you know, I'd love to do that, you know, da 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 da. And I'm like, this is very simple. Get an extension cord, take it to your bathroom, move into your bathroom for a month. Don't leave. You're going to live in that bathroom with your husband or your partner and see if you're still alive at the end of it.
Yes.
And then you'll discover whether you're ready for it.
You get to know each other intimately.
And a lot of people...
Sometimes not in the best way.
Well, no, it's not always, you know, the bathroom isn't... You hear everything, you know, it's not...
But I did think that when
you know, you've got to... People assume, and I always get people saying, oh, you're living the dream. And I think, well, I am living how I've chosen to live, and for me that was my dream to travel into it, and I don't mind living in a smaller environment, but they forget. I try and with my social media, I try and sometimes post people say, oh, you were down and this and that. It's not for sympathy, it's because I want them to know the reality. And the reality, it isn't living the dream all the time. You're parked, you know, parked in a car park, you can't move, or you break down, or you're worrying about where you're going to get your water next, or is there enough sun for the solar powers and the electrics, and where am I going to be able to empty, you know, the pee if you're in a bigger town, or where can I, you know, it can be quite difficult. And when you're not well, and actually, and people saying, oh, you're lucky you're in Menorca in winter and not in lockdown in the UK, which we are very lucky. But, you know, they forget, actually, Menorca, and I presume Mallorca's the same, in winter, it's not as cold as the UK, but it's so... damned. It gets through to your bones. And if you've had any injuries, which I have, you know, I've had broken wrists and knees and back. It's been quite hard work getting through the damp and not getting really, really warm and having a hot bath sometimes, you know, or it was hot baths, wasn't it? I was missing a couple of months ago.
I don't think we can complain too much. It's 20 degrees and sunny right now.
Yeah, or something. But you people assume it's just the dream. They see all just the dream. And it's not always that. It's difficult. It's it's life. You've got to clean. You've got to shop. You've got to...
But it's the same as moving to another country as well. Yeah. When Ollie used to work in an investment bank. And when we moved here, he told the people that he was working with that he was leaving. And somebody said to him, oh, I wish that would happen to me. In a kind of a fairy godmother went, ding!
It was like, this is a gigantic risk.
It's very hard, isn't it? Because you have to have that motivation. You have to take risks to do things. So when people say, oh, I wish that could happen, I often say, and obviously some people can't because there might be circumstances that they really can't leave to go off and travel and do things, but it is a choice as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
It is a choice. I'm choosing not to live easily and have all these materialistic things, and or, you know, have a bath and water to hand whenever I want to go and visit places, yeah, or go and see the world, or go and experience.
I think we've forgotten in a way where traveling through France, for example, France is amazing because it has it's so set up for motorhomes with the airs and things like that.
Yeah.
But they can be closed. They can have height barriers on them. They can be full. And you've driven 6 hours, and now you've arrived in the dark, and you can't get in there. So I think we forget how much research we used to do. Mm. So at least an hour every evening was dedicated to looking at places. Can the lorry get there? Can we get there? You know, Google says it's going to take 4 hours. Google says 4 hours, but Google thinks I can do 130 on the motorway when I'm limited to 90 kilometres an hour, 56 miles an hour. 90
I guess you want to avoid the tiny little lanes. It's not a
I mean, I've been in a village in Spain where we thought we could get to the coast. And I literally couldn't turn right. It physically wouldn't fit. I had to turn left and go, we're going somewhere else now.
Yeah.
I do have two sat navs, so I do use Google quite a lot, but I've also got a truck nav. Which tells me things like heights and weights and stuff like that. Mm. And will tell you, no, don't go there. I mean, occasionally it will go, instead of going straight through town, do this 30-mile round trip round the corner. And you'll just go, nah, I'll just go straight. I'm sure there's a lorry in front of me. I'll just follow him. Mm. So you...
Come on, Rollo.
Rollo's just spotted some horses going by down the road. Yeah, there's some riders.
I'm not going to ask you a figure, but was it expensive to...
Oh, don't mind. It's been all in the papers anyway about what
tell me
a
figure if you want to.
We paid $15,000 for the lorry itself.
That was the empty
lorry. Right. It was a removal lorry. Mm-hmm.
And how much
we probably about we estimate we estimate about $15,000.
10 to 15, I think. Yeah.
For the kit.
If you look at what we've got, when you look at motorhomes this size, you'd be paying nearly $90,000 to $100,000 for one this size.
Wow.
Okay. Oh yeah.
Well, you'd pay
for a 7.5-ton motorhome with all weight. A smaller 3.5 like that would probably be about $60,000.
Set the whole dogs, all the dogs off down the street now with the three horses.
I'm assuming you're not costing your own time in it.
I think one of the benefits was we did say, let's not buy the first lorry we come across. And what we did was we bought the first lorry we came across. But the reason for that was... we lived in North London. You can't park this on a street and work on it.
No.
So we needed somewhere to put it. And the guy we bought it from had a brownfield site he was building business units on. And Catherine's a great negotiator who basically said, we'll buy it now if you let us park on your land for a year. And we ended up with an electric hookup, available water, a night watchman who took deliveries for us of things and stuff like that. You know, security cameras. It was fantastic. So we got a year on there and we stayed a little bit longer and paid him monthly for being able to stay there. So even though we paid a bit more than I think we should have done for the lorry, that was worth so much to us to be able to get deliveries to places and have somewhere to park it that was secure, which is really good.
Do you have a grand plan? Are you following a route or a plan, or are you just following
your nose? Well, last year we went to France, across to Switzerland, to Austria, to Holland.
I'm going to say we had no plan,
but we went all across and did that. Went back to Suffolk, ended lockdown, and then we thought, oh, what's going to happen? And we weren't going to travel this year when we were in lockdown. We said, we'll just stay in the UK. As time went on and they started saying you can go again, we're like, oh, we really love Menorca, absolutely adore Menorca, and I love it. So, and we love diving. So we said, no, we were desperate to go diving. So we said, we're going. As soon as it opened up again, you said, we're going to Menorca to go diving. But we were just going to go to Menorca through France. I'm half French, so...
Oh.
I've got family all over France, and my mum had a house, and we were all meeting. So all the family came to meet us in France because they could all go in August. Came down to Menorca in September, and then we were going to go back up in December, back to the UK, and that was going to be it. We just were going to do Menorca, France, back up. And then very quickly, when we arrived in Spain, the government in the UK changed the thing, saying you can now no longer go to Spain. But if you're in Spain, just stay put and follow the guidelines.
Yeah.
Okay, So we're in Spain, and we think, okay, we'll do that. And then, of course, with everything that's gone on, they haven't said any more about what to do. They haven't said stay in Spain. They assume everyone's gone back. They were talking about people who'd gone for 2-3 weeks holiday.
Not people who live in a lorry.
People like us.
Yeah.
So we.
I think in terms
we've had
of travel
no plans really because of it, have we? We've
well,
not really.
Our travel plans are things like we need to go back and see everyone for Christmas.
Mm.
But how we get there is, do we stay here until we just have to drive straight back, or shall we go via Belgium? You know, it's completely fluid. We had certain dates last year and this year of where we wanted to be at what date, but in between that, we just went anywhere we wanted, really.
But it's been slightly different. I mean, it has been different this time because we're not stuck. Well, we weren't stuck. Our family mate said to us, don't come back for Christmas. Don't do it. Stay where you are. It's safe. I mean, Menorca, as you know, have got very few cases.
Mm.
They said, don't go, you know, come back.
So
it's silly.
Did you have Christmas in the van?
We didn't. We had Christmas with friends, actually.
Oh, lovely.
But we had Christmas Eve in the van, and we do know people in Menorca, so we're not, like, completely on our own. And then it kind of, as it's gone on, things got worse. Like France, recently France has reopened.
Mm.
They said you can now go and travel through to get.
Yeah.
So we could go tomorrow now, in effect, with France saying you can. But we're now at the point where we think, what's the point of going back to the UK? Because we can now hit another dive season.
Yeah, exactly. The weather's
and the weather, you know, so, but we don't like being anywhere really hot in July and August. Hence, we go to the middle of France where it's nice and cool, or back to the UK. So we will not be in the Balearics in July, August.
How are you finding it?
We will be gone by then.
Camping in Mallorca, bringing a van to Mallorca. It's not well known for its campsites.
Can I just jump in?
There isn't
for
any
a question
campsites.
What brought you? Why are you here?
Because we were in Mallorca. We've been in Mallorca for the past 6 months.
Okay.
Because it wasn't planned to be in Mallorca. Yeah. And when you travel and when you've been living that way, you are used to seeing different things. And I have exhausted Menorca, and I adore it, but I've exhausted it. And we've done the Cami Caval trails. We've done basically everything in Menorca, and we were desperate for mountains.
I think going back to our first year when we were in Menorca, at one point I said, I'm getting really bored of just beaches. As beautiful as the beaches are and the Mediterranean's wonderful and all that, I was getting very, very bored. I'd like to see some hills and some lumpy stuff and a lake maybe.
Mm.
And off we went. So we went back through the Pyrenees and France and stuff like that. And, you know, I want to see snow and I want to do this. Yeah, and after a few weeks of that, you're like, I kind of miss the beaches now. So, you know, you're very contrary about it. But, you know, I think Mallorca has a mountain range.
Oh, yeah. But also Mallorca
Whereas Menorca's quite flat.
Mallorca for me, and I always, like I said to you earlier, I think, about people assume Mallorca about beaches and holidays, which a lot of it
resorts.
Is, and they are based on the tourism. But,
you know,
I always got a feeling Mallorca's very, very touristy, and I'm loving Menorca. I know it's wrong, but I thought I don't want to. Mallorca didn't appeal to me as much. And then I realised through time in Menorca, doing a lot of research and looking in the mountains, I thought, maybe there's certain bits I might not particularly like, but there's going to be a lot that will be really appealing. We're here now. We don't like crowds of people.
Mm.
That we like to be more on our own and go and explore. We don't like big crowds. So we thought, you're never going to find a better time to explore Mallorca.
Yeah.
We went up the Tramuntana to the... from Palenque to the Tramuntana.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful views. And people have said,
you
oh, my God, that road.
Tour, no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That road, I'm sure,
it's
normally, but there wasn't a car on the road.
No.
Because of COVID, two, because it's off season, and we just thought, you know what, we need to do it now, because we'll never probably have a chance to do it like this with a big lorry in normal circumstances.
Did you drive there in lorry?
Yeah.
In a normal year, you'd get stuck behind half a million cyclists.
Yeah,
as well.
I imagine you would.
That's a very popular place for cycling. Hundreds of thousands of cyclists.
I think there's a real market in all of the islands in the Balearics for off-season walking and stuff like that, because Menorca's got its Cami de Cavals, the walk all around the edge of the island.
We're hoping
we've done a little bit of it.
Mm.
But I remember we did a few walks with the dog last year, and after about 15 minutes, you're pouring with sweat. It's just, oh, it's hideous. But if you do that in November or January or February, you can get wet, horrible weather. Mm. But you can also get days like this where it's sunny, it's 20 degrees, but it's cool in the shade. You're not just going to swelter, you know.
It's exactly what the government is doing here, actually. Are they pushing these out of season, if you like. Yeah.
See, it's interesting because nothing's really happening in Menorca, but it's different to Mallorca. Mallorca's got more infrastructure ready here to do that. You've got places open, you've got hotels, you've got flights coming in.
Yeah.
Which leads to you can actually market.
So this is more or less your first visit here, is it?
Yeah.
I've never been to this island before.
Right. And how long are you intending to spend here, or is that just see how you feel?
No, we have got a boat booked back.
Yeah.
For 2 weeks' time.
2 weeks' time.
But it's changeable. So if I feel I've not done what I want to do.
Or you won't have in 2 weeks.
You'd be surprised how much we can get done in two.
I think there's a lot of sort of bravery involved in it, because I work full time, obviously, from 10 o'clock in the morning till 6:30. I'm basically sat in the lorry in front of a computer Monday to Friday. So I've only got the weekend. So if we come here for 3 weeks, I've only got 6 days realistically.
Mm. You've got a week
so off. I've taken the middle week off. So now I've got sort of 9 days off from today.
A holiday.
So I've got that time off, and I can do that. But otherwise, sort of, Catherine's left to explore on her own, and it can be quite sort of frightening to drag a 40-kilo dog along to somewhere where you don't know. After a while.
I don't mind doing things on my own, and I'm used to that now. But in Menorca, I do have friends, so twice a week I might do one of the walks with a friend.
Mm.
And it's company. It's you know, after a while it's a bit isolating doing it all alone, which I'd be doing here again. So it's
what's on your list in your 3 weeks?
Have you got a list?
I have got a list.
Catherine is the organised one. Mm-hmm. She said to me, right, you're off for 9 days now, what are you gonna be doing? I'm like, I'm on my back a shelf. Do the electrics.
One lunch hour.
Yeah.
See, I write down everything that when I asked people, because I went online. What is it? I went online on Facebook and Instagram. I asked people on groups, and obviously some people are going to say places I won't necessarily like, but I had a lot of people in Menorca who'd been here who told me where to go, and they know what we're like. Oh, where is it? Not lamping.
It's got to be a good walk for Rollo as well, no?
Yeah, yeah.
To be fair with Rollo, if there's water involved, he's all for it. He doesn't really care past that.
Mm.
If you try and walk past a body of water with him, he's like a sort of magnet dragging you in that direction. I mean, I know Labradors are water dogs, but he is just insane. He will run down a cliff to try and get.
Okay, so the list is with Dumpalenka,
mm-hmm.
Calador, Calobra. Sacalobra.
Sacalobra.
Fomentor. Done. Valdemossa.
Yep, lovely.
Soler.
Yep.
Luke.
You've
done it. Polenta. Or is that all that same?
Polenta.
Puerto Polenta. Done. Drac caves are not open, but there's other caves that are open certain days that way. Sonserra de Marine. Go there.
Valdemossa. Other
Same places
before.
Did I say that? Formaluz.
Formaluz.
One of the prettiest villages in Spain, I
reckon. Sonreal de Sombol.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Cuba Reserve.
That's a good one for Rollo.
Yeah. Oh, we're going to. There's a parking place there, actually. Perfect. So that's a good base.
There's a big, big car park.
Cuba is a great place to base yourself so you can go see Soyer.
Yeah, that we looked and thought that would be.
Also do some amazing hikes.
Great hiking.
Yeah.
We wanted to do the train, but it's not running.
And someone said, don't miss the sunset at Port Andratx.
Port Andratx, that's near where we are.
Yeah, and come and buzz me for some dog treats. I've just copied and pasted what people have told us. Can't remember.
I probably won't find it now.
San Vincent, Estrank Beach.
Yeah. Estrank and Sonserra de Marina. I would someone
said,
choose
some of them cycling holidays said, come and give us a shout. And I'll take you on a nice bike ride.
Sure.
Paul from Cycling Holiday School.
Having heard our friend in Menorca today, who cut her face open, I'm off bike rides.
You're in but one of the greatest places on earth to ride a bike.
We did have, or we do have, two electric bikes sitting in a garage in Suffolk, and the idea was we were going to take them with us and then we could cycle places. But we forgot we bought a Labrador, who can't really do running long distance in temperatures. So anything over 24 degrees, he can't really exercise. Yeah, right. So
and we don't like to leave him. So
we'll bring him to Port Andratch and have a beer with us at sunset.
Definitely.
Because it's the most beautiful. Well, St Elmo as well, which is around the corner.
Well, that's on the list. Because it's that way, isn't it? Southwest. And next
it's actually
week,
at the bottom.
The very last and then,
that's where we're sort of starting and then heading up that way. And I'm giving myself a week.
Yeah.
Could be to do that.
What kind of food do you like? Are you into Spanish food?
We just eat anything. We eat everything. Anything, So it's,
We've got a friend in Menorca who made us a paella, so.
Yeah, I've got a friend who's a. From really mainland good. Spain originally, but she's been in Mallorca for years and years, and she taught me how to make a proper Spanish paella.
Yeah, no chorizo.
No, not paella. It was a Spanish omelette, wasn't it? Proper Spanish
tortilla.
You made a proper Spanish tortilla, and the first time you made it was for her, so the pressure was on.
Yeah. Great. But, we are enjoying Mallorca, and it's been an eye-opener, I think, compared to what I thought. My images.
And I'm glad.
No, but I can see why people have those images, because if you're saying that tourism's changing and they're looking at changing and making sure people see there's more, that's great, because actually
my own perception,
it's not what the perceptions is not right, is it, about both islands?
No, it's still not. It's wrong. It still has a bit of that Magaluf image of people not really, and it is tiny. You look at a map of Mallorca. I mean, we've done this to death on the podcast in the past, but the strip of Magaluf is about 200 yards long.
Oh, really?
That's it, isn't it? Really? Wow.
You know? I think the thing is though, there is a market for this, because people in England are sitting there. It's wet. It's cold. It's miserable. You know, sometimes you don't even really get summer, do you? It's not fantastic. And what people want to be able to do is come out, enjoy the sunshine, have a beer. And it caters for that, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
No.
Whereas, but I don't think you're sort of, you know, I'm in my 50s. I don't think your average 50-year-old wants to go at Magaluf. And I think there's time to
stag do.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the father of the
to Blackpool. Yes, go. But they're missing a kind of market of going. You know, there are quieter places, there are nicer places. Catherine was with a friend yesterday, was it, where you went out for. I call it a plat de jour because that's what they do in France. But it was sort of
In Montpellier.
Montpellier.
We went
have three courses for.
No. It was just. I don't know what it was called. It was a plateau of meat and olives and tomato on the bread.
Oh, it's Pamboli.
Pamboli. Really nice. I wanted to take you.
Pamboli is the dog's business.
It was lovely.
Just
really
a literal translation is bread and oil.
And with all the meats on it,
it's lovely.
But that's the thing, you see. I think there's also a market for other people to be able to come and see some of the culture and some of that. It's not
and
just
I've had
about
people.
A nice
I've had people saying to us and messaging me saying, I had one woman yesterday on Facebook who said, I've just booked to come to Mallorca.
Because of you?
Yeah.
Oh, well done.
And and I get that all the time with Menorca as well.
Make sure you
and
get 10% commission.
With Menorca, it's harder because I can't... There's nothing open. It's very difficult. Yeah. And you have to go via Palma, you have to go... But Mallorca is a possible...
Great that they...
Yeah, that people are wanting to...
Spreading the news.
So it's like, they're like, oh, I didn't realise there was this. I didn't realise there was that.
You're doing...
Like,
you're doing... That's the exact same thing those influencers going to Dubai are doing, aren't you?
Well, yeah, but that's what I was saying, in a way.
Thank you, Rolo.
Obviously, people, there's a fine line with lorries, motorhomes, and being in the Balearics, because it's not, they don't want it. I don't think they want it. The tourism do not want motorhomes because they're stopping it. Exactly. So it's not about that. I think what I could do and say is that I can travel and view these places. Don't have to pay for hotel stay. I've got my own place. I can do this and that. For you to then someone contact me, or whether it was EasyJet or flight and say, okay, if you give this promotional code, you get a cheap flight and you can get book a hotel. Just show people and have photos of different areas.
I should probably just explain for a second, the horse rider's back coming the other way. Yes. Rollo, set all the dogs off again.
They should hurry up. Trot a little bit, everybody.
Rollo.
The big old doggy's out there at the back as well. Having a woof at them as they... He's following them along, woofing.
They haven't got saddles on, they're just riding with numbers.
They're back.
Yeah.
I remember doing that pony tricking.
Oh, no, the first one's got a saddle.
First one's got a saddle.
The other two haven't.
I remember when I was a kid at pony trekking, we went on a week's pony trekking, and we had to, all the girls had to go, we used to have to take the horses to the field, and then, you know, we took them back, and we had to bareback to get them to the field. And none of the boys wanted to do it. So all the girls just had to go back and get the boys. This is when we're about 15.
Yeah. It's quite hard to get on a horse without
isn't it really easy to get on, but also very easy to get off the other side as you're doing it?
I've heard, yeah.
Slip off the other way.
Yeah, I've got to say, it is a bit of a challenge when you're a bit ancient and crookedy fat as well.
That's what steps are for.
I think we should probably wish you well with your visit.
Thank you.
We wish you a warm welcome on behalf of any previous
on behalf of the people.
We hope you have a nice time.
Well, we have had a nice time so far.
Continue
it's been
to
great.
Tell nice stories about the island. I'm glad that you're having a positive experience, even if you can't always park where you want to.
No, it is very positive.
I can park wherever I want. No one can really clamp me. I'll just drive away again. Not really, no. Oh. Put a clamp on me and I'll just drive off.
And just say, what do you say? Bon voyage? What do you say for a truck? Bon voyage?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Bon voyage.
Perfect.
You don't mess with Flurry the Lorry.
No, you don't, actually. It's a great thing, isn't it? I'm very jealous. It's quite charming inside.
I don't think she does very well around narrow roads, to be honest, or low-hanging trees, that sort of thing.
It is the only downside of having a lorry, is it's quite a big thing to manoeuvre about Little Mallorcan towns.
But she wasn't the truck that drove into the horse statue this week, at least.
Well, there has been some bad stroke good news, depending on how much you like the horse statue at Alcudia.
The horse statue looks like, you know those hot dog, you know, the hot, it looks like it's like a combination of a hot dog and one of those inflatable things that people put up at fairs, which kind of moves around with all the crazy
the wavy arm thing.
It's really ugly
in Alcudia,
but apparently it's art.
Yeah, in Alcudia there's a roundabout with a statue on it and I've cycled past it, driven past it many times. I thought it was a chicken with four legs.
I thought it was a hot dog.
So it was news to me that it was the horse. It does look like a rooster, actually, four legs, standing in a kind of waving its arms at waving at someone on far away.
It was a very peculiarly long tail.
It's about 30 feet high. It's enormous. It's awful, in my opinion. Perhaps I'm just a heathen. But someone drove a truck over it. Possibly a bit of a liquid lunch, I don't know.
But you've said that it says here that the sculpture suffered some damage.
I know.
Does that mean it might be repaired?
I think he'd like to come back and have another go.
But the artist has died.
Who was this? I wrote this down, actually.
This artist was an Italian man called Aligi Sassu, and he lived in Calle San Vincent until 2000, when he died.
Yeah, I don't know Allegri's the rest of his oeuvre, but I can only conclude he wasn't much good at horses.
Meow.
It's awful. Anyway,
that's horses in two consecutive podcasts.
And the next one.
And the next one as well. Horses and wine. Yeah,
they do quite like sculpture on a roundabout.
They do.
Mallorca's roundabouts. Normally very good, actually, aren't they? This is about the worst one I've seen. There's a lobster pot on a roundabout, not a million miles away from here, which suffered a similar fate a couple of years ago.
Yeah, somebody drove just straight through it.
On the wrong end of a liquid lunch drove quite an expensive BMW through the middle of our lobster pot.
I don't think we should be quite so flippant about drunk driving, actually.
No,
a lot of it happens here.
Yes, no, we shouldn't be flippant about it, but I think that's exactly what's going on, isn't it, more or less?
Yeah.
That's it for this podcast. I hope you enjoyed Flurry the Lorry.
Sun's shining. I want to go outside.
It is a glorious day. And next up, we're talking about horses and wine again.
And wine, yoo-hoo! There's a theme.
An interview with Dan and Emily at Says Rotters, so tune in for that one. We'll drop that midweek, something like that.
If you liked our podcast, please, please subscribe and even leave a nice review. That helps a lot for other people to find a podcast about Mallorca. If you want to tell us what you'd like to hear about, then you could also send us a message to MallorcaMallorcaPodcast@gmail.com, or you can find us on social media at MallorcaMallorca on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter, which Ollie's in charge of and he's never done anything with.
No, that's true. I must get around to that.
Because cool. Twitter's for clever people.
Is it?
Apparently.
All right. Not the ones I follow. See you next time.
Cheers.
Mallorca, 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 Mallorca. Let's call all three.
Bloody good show and do a podcast about it.